friends, and welcome to an episode of Crunch Time with Caitlin, which is a Cleveland sports podcast where I rant about whatever's in the title and have lively discussions with guests from time to time. So I hope you stick around, and I hope you enjoy. Hello, everyone. Football is back. The Browns are set up to have their final preseason game. The starters are going to play. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing the starters play. I think Stefanski said 20 to 25 plays. I'm not really worried about the defense. I just, honestly, just for personal reasons, I just want to see Deshaun Watson play. And I think you do, too. I don't want to see Myles Garrett play. I don't want to see Nick Chubb play. I don't even really want to see Amari Cooper play, or even Elijah Moore, but I think those guys will probably get some run, too. I don't think Chubb will, or Myles Garrett. But, you know, just seeing what at least most of the first-team offense would look like. I mean, we saw it against Washington, and it looked really good. Obviously, they got stopped at, like, the one-yard line, but you have your fourth-string running back or third-string running back. I think it was Felton and Kelly in there. And it was very, you know, basic plays at the end. So, you know, I would expect them to be a little bit different with Nick Chubb, you know, behind center or behind the quarterback or even, you know, next to the quarterback. Anyway, I digress. So looking forward to that. But really why I wanted to hit record on this podcast, obviously football's back and I wanted to, you know, kind of get back in the groove of things with when it comes to the Browns and stuff. But what really just kind of grind my gears this week was the reactions to the Browns restructuring contracts for Joel Bitonio and Myles Garrett. And they created a bunch of cap space. The Browns have now the most cap space in football. And everybody's just like freaking out. And people in the know, quote unquote know, are kind of like freaking out. Now, sure, maybe towards the trade deadline, if a star veteran becomes available and, you know, they want to go play on a Super Bowl contender team and the Browns are in a position to be buyers at the trade deadline that we've seen, like, the last handful of years, sure, they could use some of that cap space and go out and get a guy. A lot of people are talking about, like, Aaron Donald and stuff like that. I think it's kind of just, people are just kind of, you know, memeing it and stuff. But overall, like, that's most likely not going to happen. What is going to happen, though, is they're going to take most, if not all, of that cap space and roll it over to next year in order to increase the salary cap for their team. So, in layman's terms, there's the base salary cap that everybody has. That's based on the revenue that the league had or brought in and stuff like that. And, you know, teams project what it can be, what it could be, whatever. But whatever money, like, you don't have, you're allowed to roll it over to next year. Now, you can only do it once. So, you know, that's why teams, what they want is, like, you teams to be, like, to have an incentive to go out and, you know, in free agency and sign players, especially bad teams, so they're not just rolling over, like, $80 million every year. But the Browns can basically, like I said, take that 30-ish million. I think it's, like, 34, 36 million. But let's just say they don't make a trade at the trade deadline, and it is, like, 34 million in cap space or whatever. They could take that, add that onto whatever the salary cap is going to be for next year, and then that's how they could build their team and work in the parameters of that. That being said, or not really that being said, I'm just trying to get my bearings straight here. The Browns are projected to be about a little bit over $50 million over the cap. So just by doing that, just by rolling over a lot of that money, I mean, they'll be about $20 million over the cap. And then they'll rework Deshaun Watson's contract again and give him a contract extension. Because you can't really restructure a fully guaranteed contract. So what they'll do is sign him to a contract extension, convert the first year to a giant signing bonus, so it's like what he had last year, so it was, what, 40-something million dollars of signing bonus, and then, like, $1 million base salary, so that's really the only thing that'll go up against the cap. And then for the second year of the contract extension, they'll restructure it to create even more cap space, and then just kind of keep doing that until, you know, they get tired of Deshaun Watson, or he retires, and hopefully he plays well enough to where he just retires in Cleveland in 10-plus years. And then the Browns don't have to worry about that until, you know, like I said, until he retires, and then they'll have a year or two with, kind of like what the Falcons did last year. They had a giant cap hit with Matt Ryan, and then them trading him. So they brought in Marcus Mariota, they drafted a rookie in the third round, and, you know, but that's years and years down the road. We're talking about the here and now. So, just by doing those two things, they get back underneath the cap, and, you know, create some cap space. And then, obviously, you know, they'll have tough decisions to make about certain players. Amari Cooper, Grant Delpit will be a free agent, but I would expect them to franchise tag him. You know, Nick Chubb obviously is somebody they could get out of his contract next year. I'm trying to think who else. I mean, Za'Darius Smith will be a free agent, but I don't think they'll bring him back. Anyway, that's for next year. What irks me is that the Browns did this, and, like, the media, like, they just don't understand what it means to restructure these contracts and what they're going to do with this cap space. Like I said, sure, maybe they bring in a guy at the trading deadline. Okay? But, like, let's just be honest here. This, what irks me is that you had shows back in March, not understanding what restructuring a contract meant when it came to Amari Cooper. I just don't understand. How do you do a daily show that majority of the time talks about the Browns and not understand that somebody, you know, they're saying, well, why would Amari Cooper restructure his contract? Why would he take less money? He's not taking less money. It's just how his salary, his contract, affects the cap for this year. Because it pushes it back multiple years. That's where the term, like, void years come in. And usually it's like $1 or $2 million for void years for, you know, after the contract is even, you know, is even on the books, even if the player's on the books. It's like, how do you not understand this? Like, legitimately, you cover the Browns every day, yet, and this isn't a new thing, the whole restructuring contracts. This isn't even a new thing for the Browns. Like, the Browns have been doing this. So, why would you think that it meant Amari Cooper or anybody who has their contract restructured would be taking less money? Number one. Number two, the players have no say in their contracts getting restructured. The Browns can restructure any contract that they want. I just don't understand it. I don't understand what the issue is when it comes to just understanding these basic things that people in the know, quote unquote, in the media should just understand. They should just understand this. It's just so frustrating, and it's laughable, because, again, it was the same type of people who, and it was, like, the same shows, who, when the Browns restructured Joel Bitonio, who restructured Myles Garrett, they're saying the same things that they said back in March when they restructured the contract for Amari Cooper. Why would they take less money? Why would the Browns do this? Oh, that means the Browns, you know, should go out and sign a linebacker. Or bring in a new kicker. Or, okay, maybe, like, another defensive tackle, just in case. But, you know, it's like, why would they do that? Why? Why would they even say that? Why wouldn't they say, they see it, and they go, hey, the Browns just create a bunch of cap space. They have the most in the NFL right now. They also have the most expensive offense in the league. And a lot of these guys are signed long term. Maybe, just maybe, maybe. They'll take the cap and roll over most of it so they don't have to cut a crazy number of players for next year. And they'll still be able to improve their team. I know, what a crazy concept, but you can do that. And the Browns have shown that they can do that. They know what they're doing when it comes to the cap. You can make the argument Andrew Berry hasn't been great when it comes to mid-round drafting. But, like, they know how to work trades. They know how to work around the salary cap. The whole, like, salary cap thing is a myth. It's kind of true, but it's also not true because eventually, you know, hopefully in 10, 12 years when the Browns are really terrible again because Deshaun Watson retires and whatnot, and this is after winning multiple Super Bowls and whatever, and finally the Browns have to pay the quote-unquote debt of, you know, all the void years and pushing money down the road and kicking the can down the road and all that stuff. You know, it is what it is at that point. But it just really irked me, honestly. It just, I don't know. Like, how do you not understand these basic things? How, I mean, you had the same show talking about, okay, DeJuan Jones starting at right tackle, and then saying we should trade Jack Conklin to whatever team it was. I think it was, like, Seattle for, like, you know, like, swapping some picks and then us getting, like, a linebacker or something. And it's like, do you not understand that it will cost the Browns more if they traded Jack Conklin right now than it would be worth, you know, grabbing a linebacker? It just doesn't make any sense. Like, it's not like in basketball or in baseball where it's like the money, like, or even basketball, because, like, there's a salary cap, so, you know, like, you gotta match money when it comes to the salary cap, or if certain teams have salary caps, you know, or salary cap room, you know, you could just kind of fit that contract that they're acquiring into their salary cap. Football is not like that at all. There are penalties based on signing bonuses, because the team that signed certain players are still on the hook for the bonuses that certain players get. It just drives me nuts, because this is basic level, knowledge, but if you're here covering the Browns every single day, if you're covering the NFL every single day for multiple years, you should at least, at the very, very least, understand, you know, what restructuring a contract means, why it's not smart for a team like the Browns to trade Jack Conklin after they just signed him to a contract extension, because it's going to hurt them more right now than if they do it next offseason or the offseason after that. Or that's why they have, you know, the differentiates between the post June 1st cuts and the second and beforehand. It's like, I'm getting all flustered and I'm mumbling my words, and so I apologize for that. But it is like just the most basic fucking things, man. That certain, not even certain, but like a number of Browns media people just don't understand, and it just drives me nuts. It drives me nuts. Maybe because, you know, all I ever wanted to be growing up was a GM for a team. And understanding the math and understanding the rules and stuff like that, like that's all I wanted to do. And that's all I've, like, learned how to do. But just, it's not as simple as just, hey, let's trade this guy and it'll create some space. It's like, no, it'll actually cost the Browns, you know, depending on the player, depending on when, like, the time of year that they trade somebody. It gives me a headache, to be honest. So, other things I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about the, let me think, the projected 53-man, at least at the first cuts, which I think are, is it this weekend or next weekend? I don't know. But there's only one cut down day. No, it would have to be next week. Yeah, it would have to be next week because there's still games going on this weekend. The Browns, they might cut a few players and then end up bringing them back just because certain veterans aren't, once you accumulate a number of years in the NFL, you aren't subject to waivers, which is, and the Browns are going to have a few players who will go on the short-term IR, but if they put them on the IR now, they're out for the season, so they're not going to do that. They'll wait until after the initial 53-man, put guys on the IR, it'll open up some roster space, and then they'll either bring back certain players and or bring in other players that will be cut, because this is the first time that, you know, there's only one cut-down day, so teams are going to go from 90 to 53, and that's all 32 teams. And, man, I should have had the number. I should, okay, quick math. Let me open up my trusty calculator. So that's 90 minus 53. That's 37. 37 times 32. That's 100. No, wait. 1,184 players. That's a lot of players who will become available next week. And I would think that the Browns would probably either claim a couple guys or, you know, sign a few guys. If they're veterans, maybe even a new kicker, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But there's going to be a shit ton of players that are going to be on the quote-unquote open market. And, you know, it'll probably be smart for the Browns to kind of manipulate their 53-man roster, at least to start, in order to get guys like Diabate, the linebacker, onto the team, Austin Watkins onto the team, and, you know, guys like that, Ronnie Hickman onto the team, if they so choose. We still don't really know about Marquise Goodwin. I don't think because he was active, he hasn't even been activated. I don't think he'll go up against their 53. But I think if they want somebody like Jakeen Grant on this team to just return kicks and stuff, at least until Jerome Ford, because I think Jerome Ford is most likely going to be a short-term IR guy. Probably Sione's Taki Taki. But I saw him, I guess he was, I heard he was doing some drills and stuff like that. Trying to think who else was short term. Anthony Walker will most likely, I thought, play week one. It was Ford, Alex Wright, Isaiah Thomas. So if Taki Wright Thomas, if yeah, Sione's Taki, Alex Wright, I believe Isaiah Thomas and Ford. That's four spots that they could open just for the short term IR stuff. And then depending on how many offensive linemen they keep, I didn't think that they would keep somebody like Nick Harris, but, you know, he's on the last year of his contract, so might as well just as insurance. They like Luke Whippler, who I guess he's been playing some guard too. So maybe they don't, maybe they bring in, have 10 guys, including Dunn, and then obviously the two tackles with James Hudson and DeJuan Jones. Or maybe, I heard they really like the Tyron Worley, the tackle that they brought in. I guess he's played pretty well this preseason. So, you know, and Hudson was taking some snaps at guard this weekend. So it's like, hey, maybe Hudson becomes a guard, and maybe somebody like Michael Dunn ends up getting cut. I just don't think, I mean, Whippler has been, I think he was great as, like, the highest rookie center or something like that. I can't remember off the top of my head. I saw it on Twitter from Pro Football Focus. But anyway, so they had decisions, to make there, and then, you know, it just, there's ways to manipulate their 53 after, like, whatever their 53-man roster is, I can guarantee you at the time of cuts isn't going to be their 53-man at the time when they have to put in, when they start practicing for week one after Labor Day. So, just calm down. It's okay. Just, I don't know. It just irks me. I'm still just irked from the amount of Browns media that just doesn't understand certain things, and it is what it is. And then last but not least, we're going to talk about the whole Cade York situation, and really it'd be nice if they just didn't take Cade York in the fourth round. Because if he was just, like, a 6th or 7th round pick, or an undrafted free agent, he probably wouldn't even be on this team. Or they would have brought in competition, and we wouldn't have this headache. And because of the amount of games that are, I think I saw Pat McAfee had, like, this thing where it was, like, 25% of games since 2003 ended with a score between 1 and 3 points. It was like, I think it was like 56% of the games between 1 and 7 points. Like, it is extremely important to have a good kicker, and especially one that can kick in inclement weather, especially playing in Cleveland, especially if you're in the playoffs and you got to play Buffalo or Cincinnati or Kansas City, because Kansas City gets cold and has some snow in January. It's important to have a kicker who can do that. Now, a lot of the talk has been Cade York has all this talent. He's been kicking extremely well in camp, but he gets into the games and he just misses. And these misses aren't good. He thinks they're going in, and then next thing you know, halfway through, the ball tails on him, kind of like a golf swing. And he's just, like, kind of dumbfounded, like, why all these things are happening. And then it was brought up, now, I brought it up last year, but it kind of got brought back up again. And I saw it on TikTok. and I want to shout out them. It was like the dog podcast or something like that. But I saw it on TikTok, and they were talking about the holder and Cody Bohorquez, and how basically everyone he's ever held for has had horrible years relative to what they've done throughout their entire career. So then I also like went through, and so in 2018 when he was a rookie, Steven Hauschka was actually pretty good with Bohorquez as his holder. And then 2019, where was it? Because I have the notes right here, because I tweeted out. Hauschka in 2019 hit 78% of the field goals. Now, I'm not including extra points, because field goals are, like, you don't have a choice. You know, with extra points, you could choose what hash mark you're kicking from, or if you want to kick right down the middle, it's always the same, and you have that choice. Field goals are obviously way different, because you know, you, it's wherever, you know, fourth down is, or where, you know, wherever the ball's landed, you know, you don't necessarily have that choice. Anyway, so Hauschka in 2019, 78%. Now again, in Buffalo, inclement weathers, so they definitely had some type of effect, because in 2018 he struggled down the stretch in Buffalo. But in 2017, Hauschka made 87% of his kicks in Seattle. Okay, whatever. In 2020, Tyler Bass was a rookie. He hit 82% of his field goals, which is a very good number, especially as a rookie. I mean, it's a solid number anyway. But then in 21, 87%. Now, this is where things get interesting. In 2021, Mason Crosby for the Green Bay Packers kicked in Green Bay his entire career. 72%. In 2020, he was 100%, 16 out of 16. Now, in 21, they had long snapping issues. They had issues with Cody Bohorquez as a holder himself. There's a few times where he spun the ball backwards when he was putting it down, and Crosby kicked, basically, you know, kicked it into the laces. So there is some track record of Bohorquez not being a great holder. But then there was also an argument like, okay, maybe Mason Crosby is, you know, he was like 37, 38 years old. Maybe he's just done, you know. Sure, 2020, you make all your field goals. But, you know, life as an NFL player, life as an athlete, like in 1 year, you can go from being on top of the world to being, you know, basically dead weight. In 22 last year, Mason Crosby, 86%. They brought in a veteran holder, who's it? The punter from the Bears, Pat O'Donnell, I believe is his name. And his percentage went up 14%. He went back to being a really, really good kicker. And then obviously last year, Cade York, 72%. Again, just inconsistent kicks. And which is why people are like, well, maybe it is a holder. And personally, I think it's a little bit of both. Now, I know there's been a lot of experts that said, like, hey, Bohorquez isn't the issue holding. That they've worked through some of these things. But, and this is just my opinion, Bohorquez has a killer leg as a punter. Doesn't really have, like, the quote-unquote touch to, like, pin guys, but he could just, like, he could just boom the ball. He could flip field positions just like that. And sometimes he does, quote-unquote, outkick his coverage at times. We've seen it last year, if you've followed Bohorquez, or even, you know, like, Pat McAfee, when he would do those videos about the certain punts and special teams guys. Like, well, Herkes has always had one of the strongest legs in football. But is he, like, good enough to, like, also not be replaced, too? And my thought is, okay, they bring in... If they bring in somebody, I don't want somebody like the Tampa Bay just cut Rodrigo Blankenship. I don't want somebody like that. Even though I know there's a link between him and Bubba Ventrone from Indy, I don't want somebody like that. I want an actual veteran. I know it's, like, redundant, but, like, someone who's been there, done that in the league as a kicker. Somebody like Robbie Gould, who has kicked in terrible weather in Chicago and, you know, terrible field conditions. You know, with Soldier Field not being, like, the greatest ever. Also, high leverage kicks with San Francisco. Like, somebody like that. Was it Nick Folk from the Patriots? If they end up cutting him, like, bring him in. He was kicking in New England. He was kicking in Buffalo. Like, he's extremely accurate. He doesn't really have, like, the power for a leg, so anything, like, close to 50 yards or a little bit over 50 yards is kind of tough. But he is money, like, 90% the last couple years, I believe, off the top of my head. Like, he is an extremely accurate kicker, and I believe the Patriots drafted a kicker and a punter this year, if I remember correctly from one of the games I watched that was on the NFL Network, one of their preseason games. So, somebody like that, like these other young retreads, like, I don't know. I mean, Joey Sly, but it seems like he just won that job. Somebody like, I mean, and you also gotta take, you know, you have to take into account where certain guys kicked throughout their career. So, somebody like Rodrigo, who kicked inside most of the time. Like, what's his name? McLaughlin, who kicked for us in 2021. You know, was good up until the weather changed and then couldn't do anything. And then last year, he kicked pretty well for Indianapolis. But it was mostly inside. And then now I think they just signed Bagley from... Did he get cut by the Lions? Or he lost out to somebody, but the Colts just signed him. And then McLaughlin just beat out Rodrigo Blankenship for the kicking job in Tampa. But again, he's... Tampa, nice weather. I mean, Carolina is a little wonky at times, so... You know, you never know with that, but he's also kicking inside when they play the Saints and the Falcons. So, like, the weather environment also factors into, you know, do you trust... Because it's easy to trust a guy when the weather's nice in September, especially in Cleveland. But do you trust this guy to make kicks in December and in January and late January, hopefully? Like, I don't trust Cade York, but I'm also not going to trust Rodrigo Blankenship either. So, you need a guy that's been there, done that. And Mason Crosby's a free agent. But is he necessarily going to come back and kick with Cody Bohorquez, who, when he was his holder, had the second worst year of his career? Which is kind of weird, because in 2012, I believe, Mason Crosby made, like, 63% of his kicks, and the fact that, like, he was still in the league and, you know, was, I think, the second longest tenured behind Aaron Rodgers, it's kind of funny to me. But, like, especially now that, you know, if you miss any kick, you know, teams will get you out of there, which is why we're having this discussion right now. Ryan Succop, I think he was with Tampa last year. He's usually money between, you know, 45 and shorter. Randy Bullock, he's kicked for Cincinnati, so he knows how to kick in AFC North stadiums and stuff like that. But at the same time, like, man, when I think of Randy Bullock, I think of him yipping that basically chip shot in Burrow's first game, and then quote unquote blaming it on a cramp or something right when he kicked it. Again, I don't necessarily know if that was the case. I don't know if he was saving face. But it was just a little suspicious to me because I think that they played the Browns the week after, and it was like that Thursday night game, I believe, like week two. And because the Bengals brought in Austin Seibert, but he, Bullock, I believe, still kicked in that game. So, you know, he claimed it was like a quote-unquote one-off or whatever. But he's a guy that's, you know, kicked in Cincinnati, was with Tennessee for a long time. It's just, what's frustrating here is that with your kicker, it's such a hit or miss, right? Because you want them to be perfect. You know they're not going to be perfect, but it's also like this weird kind of, when they do miss, you want them to miss at like the right time, not the wrong time. Does that make sense? And I think we've just been spoiled seeing, you know, Justin Tucker in our division for so long, where he's just, the dude is just automatic from 70 in. And it's stupid. It's absolutely stupid. And we've seen guys who've gotten cut from different teams who've went on and become some of the best kickers in the game. Obviously, Dylan Carlson is that guy. They spent, I think, like a 6th-round pick on him. Minnesota did. He missed a couple kicks early on. Went to Oakland, or Las Vegas now, but at the time Oakland, and quickly became one of the best kickers in the game. And I think, you know, Stefanski was on that Minnesota team, so I think that maybe also factors in. And, you know, to chalk up another loss mid-round pick for Andrew Berry, like, I mean, I was just praising him for the, you know, him being able to manipulate the cap and make some really good trades and stuff like that. Another mid-round pick, especially like last year, where it was, I mean, Perrion Winfrey, who's off the team, Cade York, who could or and arguably should be off the team right now. It's tough out there. It really is. And like, you see the talent, he's got a killer leg, and I understand the Browns just wanting to see it through, at least for a little bit, until he starts costing you games. But in this division, in this conference, one game could have you be the third seed or out of the playoffs. And you just don't know. You just don't know. Which is why it's just a little peculiar that they're willing to go out this year and have Cade York kick and have Cody Bohorquez hold. Because, in my opinion, based on Bohorquez's track record and what Cade York has done last year, I think you can make the argument neither one of these guys should be on the team. I don't think any of these teams would be that good. So, that's just my opinion. And, I think that's enough for kicker talk for now. We'll see what he does Saturday against the Chiefs. And, because if he misses more kicks, Because then you're in kind of panic mode going into week one. You have question marks at your kicker. Even if you bring in a veteran, like, I'm sure some of these veterans have, you know, are staying in shape because they know how hot and cold kickers can be. And if a good team is, you know, has a problem there, they're going to call a veteran, and I think the Browns should have probably done that already. But again, I'm still afraid that, sure, we change kickers and some of the underlying issues with Cody Bohorquez as a holder are still there. And it just, that also, even with a veteran kicker, now I would hope and think that a veteran kicker can kind of overcome certain things. But I also think, like, those guys aren't stupid. And they've seen the track record for Bohorquez as a holder, and arguably the second best kicker on the market right now is Mason Crosby if he wanted to come back and play, and he has direct knowledge of some of the issues that he had. And again, hopefully he just worked it out, and we bring in a veteran kicker. Well, actually, hopefully Cade York can just, work through his issues and become one of the best kickers in the game. Is that going to happen? Probably not. So if they're going to go in the veterans direction, hopefully they bring in the veteran and it's a quick fix for at least this year. And we win some games. He makes some game-winning field goals. He makes his extra points. And everybody's happy. And the Browns go to the playoffs. And they host a playoff game. And everything's good. Everything's kosher. So, yeah. And I think that'll do it for this episode of Crunch Time with Caitlin. You can follow me on Twitter or whatever it's called. Is it just called X? I don't know. Anyway, you can follow me there at Caitlin Knows CLE. That is Caitlin, KATLIN Knows KNOWS CLE. And as always, friends, take it easy. We will see you in the next episode, which will be very soon. Because I'll be talking about the 53-man roster and stuff like that, and it's football season, so we are back. So, as always, friends, take it easy.